the University Tower Chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the show on which you match wits with the University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. I'm looking right at Professor Stephen Manning. What's shaking, Stephen?
Not much. Don't like the weather. Rain, no. Chilly.
Best weather ever. Needs to be like about 20 degrees colder, and then I'd be happy.
Stephen, I was returning home from dinner at my parents' last night and couldn't help but remark at 8:15 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time that my thermometer in my car read 80 degrees Fahrenheit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I said, this is out of the ordinary.
Yeah, it has been nice.
But the rain, I mean, yeah, the water I could do without, and all the things that come with it, I could do without the water.
Yeah. Spent a week being jacked up about the Red Sox, of course.
And why not? Absolutely fantastic. Great time for me to tell a tale that I was waiting for this show to mention to both you and Heather. I guess the best that Fox Sports 1 could do two nights ago was a replay of the Red Sox big win that pushed them to the ALCS. Right. My wife didn't know about that in prime time, though. So I was able to call almost every single thing that was about to happen in the game, including the win. And she didn't catch on until afterwards. It was very amusing.
You should just told her, honey, I'm going to go play sports betting on this. And come
she's
on.
She's smart enough to press that button that shows the date of the original air. And she's like, this was yesterday. Like, ooh.
Very nice. Even if you didn't like the outcome, there are some great baseball plays throughout that series.
100%. I think about Professor Heather Hill every time I see one of my old boys, JD Martinez, go into play, because chances are some people are going to be coming home, mostly him, in almost all those cases. So I know that you are very excited for the Red Sox to be in the top four here.
Oh, it's great. It's wonderful. Everybody thought Tampa Bay was going all the way, and nope.
In another place on my screen, Professor Beth Oljar is there, and it was a very tender moment between you and your cat.
Oh, yeah. You, my pretty girl. Don't harass your sister. Don't beat her up. You know, Bally's 12. She doesn't understand why Mia has all this energy, and Mia doesn't understand why Bally doesn't want to play. So I've had to create places where Bally can get away from her on some higher spot so she doesn't feel quite so terrorized in her own house. I'm sure she's wondering, like, what did I do to deserve this? You had to have another cat?
I love it. And of course, all of that invade with like a single withering glare, right? Isn't that how cats communicate?
Sometimes, yep.
Someone else I know who is big into cats, I think we just saw something, or maybe it was before we started recording, is Professor Mara Livesey.
Jupiter did make an appearance, and thankfully my cats are equal in age, but Jupiter is just relentless, and Luna hisses, she growls, she's like, I don't want to play, don't play with me right now.
Is it always right now, though, Mara? Is there never a time?
It's always right now. Yeah. It's always right now, even when Luna instigates it. And then Jupiter's like, okay, I'm going to get you now. And Luna's like, just kidding.
I love it. I love it. And last but most certainly not least, Professor Dave Chow.
Pleasure to be here, as always.
Any interesting sounds coming from the neighborhood today, Dave?
Other than your place going up, that's about it.
Still going, huh?
Still going. Yep. I can hear it loud and clear. If you want me to check on the progress of your driveway, I can go over there and flog them a little bit for you if you want. So,
You know, we're going to keep the flogging to a minimum or zero on this project, but I do appreciate the sentiment.
Actually, one of the builder's trucks, they had their hood up. I think one of their cars shorted out or something.
Oh, no.
So they're working hard.
I just know that the neighborhood is under control because Dave is peering out the window every once in a while.
No, I just want to see if I got a check in the mail. That's all.
Yeah, there you go.
Is the new house going to be as conducive to Halloween decorations as your current home?
That's a very good question. I will not lie and say that I haven't thought about that pretty constantly since we actually signed on the house. So,
If you want, I can possibly set you up with like a 2-day lease on my property over here if you want. So
sure. we could find a way to connect our yards and have some sort of ghost going back and forth on a wire, and who knows what we can do.
We've actually thought about doing a block party for that time of the year too.
Sure. Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah. Well, folks, this is a program where you can send us questions regarding anything. If you stump the panel, you win a prize. Send us the questions in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. You can find us on Facebook or Instagram, or listen on your favorite smart speaker by asking it to play Ask the Professor at University of Detroit Mercy. I put this set of questions together. It's a total rip, so I'll give credit where credit is due. One of my favorite websites of all time is Mental Floss. It's gone almost completely virtual. And one of their authors, Paul Anthony Jones, put together an absolutely fascinating set of facts. 25 words that don't have the same meaning as when they were first used. It's inevitable that words change over time. In some instances, words gain new meanings entirely different from their original definition. And these are definitely everyday kind of words. What we want to do is assume, when you hear me say the word, that you know what its common modern meaning is, but what do you think its old meaning could have been, with a couple clues? So we'll start with alienate. Alienate, like alien, is derived from the Latin word alienus, which is used to describe anything unfamiliar or foreign. But what was its original meaning?
Madness.
That's not what it says here.
Psychology.
For the record, because I think it will help definitely Professor Hill, first usage was mid-1400s, if everybody wants to put on that hat.
Wow.
Ooh, that's an alienate. Past sense of alien eating.
Foreign.
You know, foreign is one of the words that we use now, but this was a tough one to start with. What I want you to do is just kind of go one or two steps outside of the modern definition. Its original basically would have been unconnected, things that aren't related to each other. So that's a little less negative. And I think that's the point that Beth was trying to make. I mean, we certainly use it in a very negative connotation.
Well, and that's why psychiatrists were first called alienists, because people with mental illness were thought to be alienated from their true selves, right? Yep. So shrinks were thought of as alienists. In fact, there's a great book by Caleb Carr called The Alienist, which got turned into a TV series.
Just going to say, a very popular modern streaming series. Yeah, yep. Absolutely. Yeah. How about this one? Everybody knows what ambidextrous means?
Mm-hmm.
Able to use both hands equally well. But that wasn't its original meaning.
So I'm assuming it still has something to do with digits or fingers, arms?
You know that it doesn't?
Oh,
is it like calling upon spirits or the spirit world or something like that?
I kind of like that, Heather, but that's not actually
I
what
like
it says.
It too, so yeah. Give it to me. No,
go for it. This was mid-16th century, had to do with the legal profession,
like double jeopardy.
Getting closer. Ooh, it's kind of the original two-faced. So a lawyer that would take bribes from both sides of a case was referred to as ambidextrous. Oh, using your right hand twice is what it meant, because that's really what the word breaks down into, right?
Gotcha.
So here's my all-time favorite. And I got to say that in the early morning when I'm taking my walks around the block, I've already see if I could get this to catch on. Just like Heather with the spirits definition. I think we all know what a bunny is. But a bunny was a nickname of another common animal when it was first used hundreds of years ago. What animal was that?
Squirrel.
It was a squirrel. That's right. Exactly. A squirrel's first derivative Old English was a bun. That was a squirrel. And I believe squirrel comes from Greek or something like that. So they were bunnies. Yeah, exactly.
The original whistle pig.
I knew that was going to come up too.
Of course.
I think we're all used to the word cheap, meaning low cost, but that wasn't its original usage about 500 years ago. What did it mean?
As an Old English bird call.
Sounding like a chicken.
Yeah. Cheap.
Cheap.
Bird call's a good guess.
Has something to do with chafing or something like that, possibly?
Nope. Some kind of a rock or something, or
skin actually, disease.
You're a little closer with rock. What I would ask you to do is, and it's difficult, right? Divorce yourself from the emotional tie of the word cheap and then just go to the basest form. I believe that some of you know the usage of its form cheapen. To cheapen something means to ask how much it costs. Does that help?
Reduce something?
Sale?
It literally just means sale. Yeah, it just means to buy something or to trade. So when you're going to cheap somebody, you're just going to, you know, have an exchange. And I believe that obviously it got a bad rap after, a few ways around the block. It's kind of interesting. Nowadays, when we say we're down in the dumps, we mean that we're gloomy, in a low-spirited mood. But the original dump from which this derives was actually an old Tudor English word for something else.
Going to the theater?
No, it wasn't.
Or going to a bar?
Council of Chairs meeting.
Falling into the moat?
Your clue is that it's probably from an even older Dutch word, D-O-M-P, dump, which I believe was also translated to the damp in English, which means haze, mist, or fog. Does that help you?
Like go swimming in the bog? What?
Out in the rain?
So you were in the fens? That's normally...
I mean, you're all, as we were with the Illinois pumpkin thing, circling the correct response. It,
the drain.
It means to sort of be lost in that moment, you know? Like, if you're in the dumps, it's like you're in a fog, you're in a haze. Like, I don't know what's going to happen next.
Oh, it's like in the weeds, right?
Exactly.
So, okay.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Again, I like my response better. So.
There's nothing wrong with your
response. I was thinking about like when Matt first had his basement being pulled together. That's all.
Oh, geez. Unbelievable.
Remember, we were making the suggestion, now's the time to put in that fake plastic skeleton.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. How about the word handicap? Folk etymology claims the word handicap from injured soldiers returning home from war, unable to work, being forced to beg on the streets, with their caps in their hands. In fact, that's completely untrue. Instead, handicap was originally from what?
It didn't have anything to do with the race or betting or anything like that, did it?
A disadvantage.
Yeah. I mean, I'm surprised. I think we're all just like really good with words that we get bits and pieces. And we're very favored, of course, to have an English professor here with us today. But it actually was an old form of bartering. You could think about it that way. So two goods are being assessed by maybe a third person who would try to make sure that everything was going to be okay before
you
turn something into something else.
Okay.
How about, this is a very, very common word, husband. Husband.
Like a farmer or somebody.
Yeah, like tends to animals.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, animal husbandry. Yeah.
Right. You can get degrees in it.
Yeah. Man who lifts toilet seat up.
I think that that's a good one. This is probably the closest we've got with very, very little coming in from the side. It means something about owning a home is what it actually comes from. And I think that would apply, to having a job, owning a farm, things like that. Yep.
He who has a mortgage.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, my. How about the word jargon? Jargon was originally a word for what? First major usage was Canterbury Tales. I love it.
Oh.
Is it a soldier? A dance?
So in modern sensibility, it's incomprehensible language, right? Is what jargon is.
Like babbling, yeah. So
how about if I tell you it's like May 12th and
a lie?
You live in Metro Detroit and the sun just came up, you're definitely going to hear a lot of jargon.
Traffic?
Mm-mm.
Like a cock-a-doodle-doo?
Yeah. It's the twittering of birds. It's like that incomprehensible chattering of birds. Early in a spring morning, which of course makes perfect sense when it becomes the modern use of the word jargon.
Okay, all right.
But that is straight out of Canterbury Tales. Hmm. Pretty cool.
Okay.
Thank you, Chaucer.
Yeah.
You're listening to Ask the Professor from University of Detroit Mercy. We're grateful to those listeners who submitted questions for today's show, and we welcome your questions at atp@udmercy.edu. Now, let's return to our host, Matt Mayo, with more questions for the panel.
And we are back with some words that don't have the same meaning as when they were first used. How about livid? L-I-V-I-D. Describing something as livid.
Is it bloody?
I'm giving it to you. It was a color associated with being bruised. So you made a good connection there, Heather. That's awesome. There is a big to furiously angry, if you think about it. But, you know, being bruised and angry kind of have negative connotations associated with them.
So it's an interesting color then, huh? Hmm.
It's a color, yeah. It's a color of being bruised.
So it's like purple, bluish with a hint of yellow on the edges.
Exactly.
Ooh.
I think that we should be able to put this one together fairly straightforward. How about naughty?
I think it's a perfect word.
100 years ago.
It is a perfect word.
Yeah.
What did it originally mean?
Mm-hmm. We know that it means kind of misbehavior in the modern sense, but what did naughty come from?
Yeah. It has to do with the word not, like no.
It does. Except like not doesn't mean no, it means
help.
Like to have nothing.
It means nothing is what
nothing.
It means. It
I was just gonna
nothing.
Say oh, okay. No. Oh, okay. Not. Yes.
So
not.
This is someone without any morals. You are being naughty, like you don't have anything, right?
Yeah.
Wait, I wasn't talking to you, Dave.
Oh, okay. I thought you were making a personal comment. That's all. Morally bankrupt, you know, that kind of thing.
I'm going to bear that in mind now when I want to call someone naughty, that I could be saying that they're lacking in morals. That would be cool.
How about the word punk? Ooh, that's got a lot of things attached to it. Punk. No one actually knows where the word punk comes from.
Pumpkin.
But its earliest meaning in English came from Shakespeare's Measure for Measure.
Man, this Shakespeare guy gets around.
Mm-hmm.
Punk.
Drunk. Who's a decent writer? Drunk?
Drunk is really close. But actually, I think it's...
crazy.
What do we say? The oldest profession?
Prostitution.
Yeah, it's a prostitute is a punk. From Shakespeare's Measure for Measure. However, over the centuries, the word seems to have accrued the whole host of unsavory connotation. It's like, I even call my kids punks every once in a while. I might
and
have
a wonderful genre of music, right? So,
yeah, when Steve and I are running and there's some younger runner out there running faster, we always refer to him or her, well, usually
young
not
punk.
Punk.
Wait, is that... Now, I... Just out of curiosity, is that something older people say to younger people?
Oh, yeah.
It's always on the downward slope, isn't it?
Yep.
And when we use it, we mean to imply that they're being a little show-offy.
Yes, yes.
And of course they're not. They're just running.
We're going considerably slower.
That's
we
right.
actually said that. We occasionally see the UD Mercy track people running from the university up through our neighborhood and at punks. They have their shirts off. They have these beautiful bodies. And here we are slogging along like old people. They're definitely punks.
Hey, speak for yourself. Totally true.
Punk was pretty popular in the United States in the early 1900s. It was a petty criminal. But by even the 20s and 30s, it had morphed into someone who is inexperienced. So it just sort of wanders around the sort of undesirable person motif.
And then punk rock and
of
punk
course.
Rock, Punky Brewster.
It's everywhere.
How about the word thrill?
Ooh.
To thrill.
Opposite of naughty? Thrill.
Right, full of morals.
He said that sometimes in really old manuscripts, you may actually see the phrase nose thrills, as in your nose. That
sniffling,
would be your...
sneezing?
Nope.
Runny nose, allergies?
Likely Shakespearean 1500s.
Like a wart on the nose?
That's, you're getting closer. You're getting closer.
Right.
It's something that these young punks these days tend to do a lot of with their nose. Does that
punch their noses?
Pierce it.
It's piercing. So if you're going to thrill something, you're going to punch a hole in it.
Oh.
Don't get the whole nose piercing thing.
It's not for everybody, is it, Beth?
Or plugs.
It would hurt. Yes. I mean, I thought getting my ears pierced hurt because they don't tell you how loud that gun is going to sound when it goes off right next to your ear. So my immediate impulse was to jerk my head away, right? Which was, yeah, not good.
Not good. Oh, my gosh.
The third hole I have was done with a darning needle.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, that's old school.
Well, we know from Pulp Fiction that if you're serious about piercing, you have to do it with a needle and not with that gun, which goes against the whole philosophy of what piercing is about, according to Rosanna Arquette.
Last one here, professors. It's a simple one, a good one to end on. It's the word queen. I think we all know the queen is married to the king, but in its original usage, what do you think it meant?
Second fiddle?
Mm-mm.
Consort.
I mean, getting closer, frankly, Beth, I feel like I should give it to you. It was a general replacement word for the word wife was queen to start with. So that's how we get to I would say modern usage, but to call it modern, I mean, it's been around for hundreds of years as the wife of the king, right?
Or a chess piece.
Okay. Time for us to go to our favorite, our list of imponderables from the Burroughs family to finish up our episode for today. And let's see here. What should we ask the professors about? Oh, okay. Now this is pretty specific. What's your favorite memory from one of your childhood birthday parties?
Ooh.
Or maybe we just say a childhood birthday that was particularly memorable.
Not what necessarily ours? Oh, okay.
Okay, make it about yourself.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Let's see.
I guess I had the chance to see this ahead of time, so maybe I should start. But I actually didn't have birthday parties when I was growing up. I can think of having like one or two. It wasn't something that I was upset about. You know, I didn't need a bounce house and a pony or anything like that. But my birthday is, as I believe you all know, very close to Halloween. And one year we actually did have a Halloween party that was also a birthday party for me. I think I was in third or fourth grade, and that was kind of fun.
Oh, I had a toga party for my 17th birthday.
Nice. Yeah.
Wow.
It was really fun. Cool. I know Mara's got this look on her face like, what?
Wait a minute. Yeah.
17, you said.
And I looked awesome in my toga.
That is the best part.
Okay, we need pictures. We need pictures.
I probably still have some.
Yes. Awesome.
You won't get to see them.
Okay, well, okay, Beth, you do know that never stops me. So, I mean, come on. Last week I drew, you know, zombie Beth with That's rainbows right. out of your butt, too. So, I mean, I'm not saying nothing.
So draw me in a toga.
Sure, I could do that. That's easy enough. Okay, birthday, huh? Okay, for me, I remember one year getting, I think, oh, this is going to sound real bad of me. Packaging-wise, it was a brand new Monopoly board. Same game, brand new packaging. I thought I was, the rat's patoot right there when I got that brand new Monopoly game.
That's
Played
cool.
it for hours on end.
I bet you did.
It is the quintessentially American game, after
it
all.
Is, yeah.
It is true.
And I think I told you folks before, we used to play marathon sessions of it with the, you know, the kids down the block.
Right.
Okay, it's 5:30, time to go home for dinner. Write down where your pieces, what pieces you own, how much money you have. We continued for weeks on end.
There is no way to play Monopoly without it being a marathon session. I mean, seriously.
Well, we also offered credit.
Oh, well.
And now that's what kept the game going forever. That's all. What?
That's Mara, have you come up with a childhood birthday memory?
So I don't have any specific memories of like individual birthdays when I was a kid. I'm not sure what that means about me, but since I had a summer birthday, I think a lot of the time we just like hang out at the pool.
Yeah.
We belonged to this like pool club. So we just like go hang out and like that was enough.
That's any, cool. Okay, now what about food? What'd you have for food at those things? Anything memorable? Anybody have like crazy wacky food?
A Baby Ruth bar, perhaps?
Well, Mara had food, but she had to wait 30 minutes after eating it before going in the pool.
That's right.
Heather.
I don't know. This is a hard one.
It is. Yeah.
I don't know why this is so hard. Maybe because I'm so old.
Stop.
Oh, please. You're younger than me, so.
Yeah, we don't have to cut you in half to count the rings yet, do we?
I hope not.
That would be too cruel.
I think there was one year when I was fairly young and my mother's mother put together this like really beautiful sort of box. It seemed really beautiful. And it had like, I don't know, like different kinds of trinkets and things, nothing really expensive, but like stuff that my mother had had when she was my age that my grandmother had still kept. Right.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And I wish I still had that now. I mean, sure. I don't know where it all went, but sure. It was just very sweet.
That's nice.
That's cool. Yeah. Come on, Stephen. I know. Yeah.
Stephen.
Yeah.
I don't have many memories of either good or bad necessarily of birthdays. They were very much downplayed in my family as a kid. I'm wondering why. I can come up with two reasons. My mother was 2 days older than my dad. One was July 3rd, one was July 5th, and one of my brothers was also July 3rd or 5th. So three of the five people had their birthdays. Oh. And it was on the long July 5th weekend, and we just did July 5th things. Yeah, the dinner and fireworks and stuff, but no big deal was made of the birthdays. My birthday is around Labor Day, and I can't remember ever getting a memorable birthday present, but since it was back to school time, I typically got new socks and underwear for my birthday, which is, that pretty much tells you the thrill of my birthday years growing up.
Did anybody celebrate like their 30th? Come on, Mara, what'd you do for your 30th?
You forget my 30th was during the pandemic.
Oh, yes. Yeah, well.
So I stayed at home and didn't see anyone.
Oh,
are you that young? Okay. Wow.
Big reveal here. Big reveal.
Now. My birthdays are better now than they were when I was a kid. In my neighborhood now, there's this enormous party. I mean, it's for like third grade graduations and sixth birthday parties and a huge deal. The street is packed with neighbors and family and friends, and it's way outside the immediate family. So
that's true. Yeah, there's a lot to what you're saying, Stephen. I've mentioned before how my poor sister's birthday is December 21st and just everything gets overshadowed. So my mom would do these half birthday parties during the summer, which was a genius thing. It was just an excuse to get people together. Based on when your birthday is, there's things that happen. What I actually thought of when you were talking, Stephen, is when we first moved into our house, a baby was born right after our oldest, and he was born on the 4th of July. And they let this kid ride out, hey, you see those things in the sky? That's all for you. They pushed it to like 13 years old. It's like, wait a second. This is a different holiday. This has been one of our richest discussions ever, but I'm afraid the time has come to say goodbye, Dave.
See ya.
Mara.
Goodbye.
Beth.
Goodbye.
Heather.
Bye-bye.
And Stephen.
Goodbye.
And now these words...
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is produced and directed by Michael Jason and Brian Masonville, and our executive producer is Professor Jason Roach. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mayo.